On this episode of The Edge podcast, well-known staffing industry leader and RTech Information Systems CEO and co-founder Ranjini Poddar joins ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery for a thoughtful conversation on what it takes to be a leader. Ranjini shares how she found herself on an unconventional career path from law school to staffing CEO, what makes RTech such a successful business, and what she hopes to leave as her legacy for others. To start, Leslie asks Ranjini to tell us about how she began her journey in the staffing industry. Let's dive right in.
Over the past 26 years, you have built RTech Information Systems. But what may surprise many is that you actually went to Yale Law School and started as an attorney. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you started in staffing and ultimately founded your company, RTech.
Sure, Leslie. So actually, I always grew up around business. My father had a small business that imported and distributed cast iron products, and I used to help him quite a bit, starting from the time I was, you know, probably 10 or 11 years old through high school and during college with his small business, just doing various things like invoicing or administrative work, but then also doing more detailed analytics work. As a 13-year-old, I was playing around with spreadsheets on VisiCalc on an Apple computer ages ago. So not something every 13-year-old does. So it taught me about business in general, just sort of gave me a comfort feel as to what it takes to operate your own business. And I think I always knew growing up that I would go into business, but took a tangent after doing my undergrad and ended up in law school and really enjoyed it and worked on Wall Street for 5 years as a corporate lawyer doing M&A and securities work and, you know, other transactional work. But then ultimately came to a turning point in my life where I needed to, you know, think about whether I wanted to stay in law school or go back full-time in business. And RTech had actually been a firm that my husband and I had co-founded when I was in law school in 1992. He had worked in the IT consulting field as a consultant, so kind of knew about it. And I had helped him out, but then stepped away from it, but ultimately decided to come back to it full-time in 1999.
Nice. Well, we have a lot in common, I guess, growing up in learning from our parents on the entrepreneur side and seeing that it is possible to have your own company. And I do feel like when you grow up in it, it almost seems like not as big of a deal as those who do when it comes to taking that risk. While it's still a risk, it just seems more attainable. And with that, we look up to you for a few different reasons. And I thought with the audience listening, I would just share some stats just in case they're not familiar with you or the company. So effectively, over the years, you were most recently named International Women's Entrepreneurial Challenge. So that's the IWEC award winner. You were named one of 25 women as legacy leaders with WeBank, so the Women's Business Entrepreneurial Center, as part of their anniversary celebration. Named one of Forbes' 50 fastest growing women-owned companies. You've been part of the Staffing Industry Analyst Global 100 Women in Staffing list, of course, listed as one of the top 20 largest staffing firms in the U.S. Okay, let's face it, Ranjini, I could go on and on this entire podcast, but I won't. The point is made. You've got a long list of awards and recognition, which is terrific. Congratulations. I know it can be humbling to hear it when someone says it out loud, but it's true. So tell us, what makes RTech so special?
So, Leslie, I think it's always about the people, and we have an amazing team. They make me look good every day, and there are clients that we have worked with for almost 20 years at this point, and you know, have very strong relationships with and go the extra mile to do what we need to do to meet their needs. And ultimately, it's our teams that execute on that every single day across the country and in India, China, and Canada. And that's what we owe our success to, or Artek owes its success to, is just every single employee who's out there doing this on a daily basis.
Well, it certainly takes a team. It also takes a great leader. And I remember when you were featured actually in our blog back in 2015, seems like it was just yesterday, but a few years ago. And I remember you talking about what it takes to be a great leader. You said you have to be inspiring. You have to set a vision that people can work towards and can identify with you. So who inspired you over the years to become the leader you are today?
I really built my leadership style just from a variety of different sources. Since I've never really worked externally at any other firm for a longer period of time, it's really been only very early in my career, I've gained my or I've matured as a leader more by watching others, whether they're clients or others in the industry, attending conferences, you know, attending workshops. So I think I've picked up things along the way that resonate with me and I can incorporate in my own personal style. I also think it's really important to lead by example. I mean, that's something I hold very near and dear, even after, you know, doing working in and with Artek for almost 20 years at this point, is I never ask my team to do anything that I would never do myself. You have to lead from the front. Now, of course, at this point, we're a large firm or a mid-sized firm, and we have, I mean, now I have folks on my team that do certain aspects of my job much better than I do, which is, you know, I always want to hire folks that are smarter than I am. But at the same time, if I'm not willing to put in the extra time and the extra effort, then I don't feel like it's fair for me to ask my team to do that.
That's great. I can see why and have read, you know, many pieces from you, just why your team is so strong. It does take a strong leader. And I agree, just learning from different people. It could be a keynote presentation you attend or reading articles on leadership philosophy. It doesn't necessarily take one person, but being open-minded and learning from multiple different avenues can certainly help. You mentioned earlier Yale Law School, so certainly education is something important to you and something you actually talk about a lot is a passion for education. What role do you believe education should play throughout your life and career, and how perhaps has it helped you get to where you are today?
Oh, for me, education is everything. It gives you the foundation to achieve whatever you wish for in life. And I think I believe in it not so much about the content, but really more about how it teaches you to think and to continue to learn. I still learn today when I attend, you know, various industry conferences, listen to other speakers, whether they're from the industry or not, and attend workshops. I learn from my teams. I have certain team members that are just amazing in what they execute and what they build every day, and I pick up aspects of what they do and learn from them and try to apply it across the organization. So I think just in general, I believe education gives you the opportunity to succeed in life, whatever that success looks like for you personally. You know, it just opens up all sorts of opportunities to you. So that's why I'm so committed to it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We always say, if you're not learning, you aren't growing. And I think for me, growing up, I definitely did not take advantage or appreciate the value of education and the opportunities it could open, but it's something I speak to quite often. And now having a almost 2.5-year-old son, already at 2.5, my husband and I, you know, thinking about just everything from preschool to where he goes to elementary school, just setting that stage and that foundation for a solid education early in his life. But I was interested in your perspective as you know, I think oftentimes we think of education just getting you through college, so undergrad and postgrad, and if you go to law school and whatever it may be that you pursue, and that perhaps education stops there unless you continue to take courses. But it really is just an ongoing life event of learning in different ways and learning every day so you can continue to grow. I was reading up and you gave this piece of advice. Basically, you said a positive attitude, self-confidence, and a fierce tenacity will go a long way in helping you succeed when the odds are stacked against you. I swear every time I see a picture of you or see you at a conference, wherever it may be, you always seem really happy, positive, upbeat. You've got a big smile on your face. And certainly, I'm guessing over the course of your career, perhaps you've encountered some adversity, maybe a situation or some things that have happened as you've grown and scaled your company. Perhaps you could share with the audience a story where you felt like the odds were stacked against you and you persevered. What were the leadership traits that really helped you kind of pull through that situation?
Oh, definitely, Leslie. We've had plenty of those situations over my career, but I think I'll speak to one in particular. Early on in my career at Artek, we were a very small, you know, company around the $5-6 million range, and we were in danger of getting left behind by the industry. Our prospects and clients were looking to engage with firms that were much, much larger than us, and we needed to grow in order to be viable. The odds were stacked against us, but what we did is we created a new business development plan, and then we executed against it. And it was really all about winning one contract at a time so that we grew in size. A couple of years later, we were in a very significant RFP process with a major client where they were down selecting, you know, their vendor list down from about 45 down to the teens. And we didn't know whether we would be viable and, you know, make it through this cut. And it was really a turning point in Artek's history. But, and from a size standpoint, we probably were not there. However, we presented innovative solutions to the client, and they really saw, or they could see through our presentations, how we were willing to think outside the box to deliver to what they needed. So instead of looking backwards, as many of our competitors were doing, we were looking forward and trying to find a solution that was winning for them and for us. And I think that's really what's led to our consistent growth in terms of being able to partner with our clients and really just having an attitude that, you know, we will persevere and we can do it.
So you could have been stuck in the mentality of we're X size and probably too small to be delivering on this, but instead you felt and thought big and looked at it not only from your own perspective of winning it and where it could take your company, but also through the lens of your client. I love that. So being creative on their behalf, but also leveraging that to your benefit. I remember that story from the past, and it seems like that really helped your company kind of get to that next level as well.
Yeah, and I think it's actually part of our DNA as well. So, I mean, obviously now we're of a size where that's not a factor, but there are still situations where you're up against, you know, competitors that may have better relationships or more experience in a certain area, and it's really about believing in yourself and providing an innovative solution and letting the chips fall where they may. So really, you know, just persevering in terms of we can do it. And, you know, we don't win every single time, but we win more often than not.
So, again, looking through the lens of you being the leader in your company and kind of guiding them down that path, looking back at who you were as a leader when that opportunity came up, I guess if you were an up-and-comer in the industry today and they're looking to grow their own leadership style, we talked about it a bit earlier, just how it just continues to evolve and change as you learn and observe things from other leaders in the industry and go through your own experiences. Is there anything you would share with up-and-comers as they look to develop their own leadership style?
I think you have to find your own personal style. I don't think you can emulate or copy, maybe you can emulate but not copy others' leadership styles. But early on, I learned in my career when I met some of our competitors that were kind of becoming dinosaurs, that they were always looking backwards and trying to take the industry back to what they felt was its heyday, as opposed to looking forward and embracing change and trying to learn to evolve with change. So I think for me, part of leadership is to be comfortable with change and to know that it's going to happen and learn how to leverage the change and take advantage of it.
Certainly in our industry today, it's all about change. The technology alone that has come forward in the past 2 years is completely changing the way people work and interact with us and how we can interact with clients. So I really appreciate that and feel the same way, like being future forward or just thinking of the future and being open to that is pretty critical, which also will set you apart from your competitors, which is great to have that continued success. You touched on the word diversity. So I'm going to shift gears on you here for a minute and talk a little bit about the topic of diversity. And you happen to be part of a small but really powerful group of women, female CEOs in our industry. We actually did just a quick study with the top 50 staffing companies to get a sense of the C-suite. And it turns out, it looks like, based on public information that we could gather, it's around 73% are men compared to 32% of women. So not that much different in recruitment than I would say in technology and other male-dominated industries, really. But the thing that's interesting about our space is that we actually do have a lot of women in staffing, a lot of women in operations roles, but also fee earner roles, so sales and recruiting and mid-level management. But somehow that number starts to shift when we reach the senior ranks. So lately, I speak a lot on this topic in the industry and within technology. Something that I've heard a lot of women speak up about lately is being in that fee earner role, so let's say sales and recruiting, and when they go on maternity leave, they feel like there isn't a lot of incentive to come back because of the way they were compensated during leave. So it's almost like in some cases they feel left behind or they have ground to make up, financially speaking, from what they were earning before. And with, you know, men obviously not taking as long of a leave, they aren't really as impacted and keep rising up the ranks between performance numbers alone. So certainly that's just one issue I hear about, which is compensation and people then leaving the industry once they hit that mid-level and are raising and growing up a family. But I'd love to hear your thoughts just on what the industry can do to better support women in the, you know, industry that we have and how we can stay, how women can stay within our industry and even advance in it. Any feedback or perspective you have to share based on your experience?
Sure, Leslie. I don't believe it's just compensation. I personally think that many women step back due to social and family pressures at various junctions in life, rather than leaning in. This particular issue has actually stumped me in terms of how to develop more women in our tech. You know, we have a fair number in leadership positions in different departments, but as you said, they're more in the mid-level management roles. And I have, you know, thought about this issue long and hard, and I think women definitely need mentors in terms of being able to look up to how to navigate and how to grow personally. But I don't think this is something where I have unfortunately found a solution for yet myself.
Yeah, and I think unfortunately there isn't that silver bullet here to fix it. I think just having the conversation and talking about it and making it more aware. I will say in the last several months, it's the first time I've heard more women coming up to me and speaking very frankly about fears of even having children because what it will do to their career. This feeling like if I even take off time on maternity leave, it's going to set me back. So they are already setting themselves back and holding themselves back from taking on opportunities when they just start to even think about having kids or a family. And I think I know more women like you and other people in the industry who step forward and can show and tell their story of how you make it work and how you can succeed. To your point about having mentors, I do these podcasts almost every week, and it's interesting. A lot of the women on the podcast are at that kind of senior VP, VP level. They haven't quite cracked into the C-suite yet, and there are a lot of them, super talented women in our industry. So I do think it's also a matter of time before it starts to just naturally happen, because we're on the cusp of it right now with all of the talent we have within our industry. But the more we can have leaders speaking up and looking at, truthfully, a hard look at what makes it difficult for women to stay and advance in our industry, and knowing that they need to have the confidence to speak up and ask the right questions and look at, you know, what are reasons. It's advancement, it's compensation, it's flexibility. There's a lot of things that make it up. What can we do with our own programs as individual companies and then as an industry, I think it's an important topic. So with that, just shifting gears on staffing leaders in general who own their own firms. So we work with a lot of companies at that mid-size and larger firms. And a lot of times what we'll hear is perhaps they hit a wall. They'll hit $25 million or $50 million in revenue, and they just get stuck. And, you know, sometimes they'll run flat. Other times they're starting to lose revenue and lose momentum and traction, and they feel like they're just hitting a wall and hard to get to that next level. What did you do to keep going? I mean, obviously you run a very successful company. Did you seek your own mentors? Did you join a peer group, the industry associations, maybe all of the above? You know, what advice do you have for those people? Maybe there are three things you believe are keys to your success that you think others can learn from.
I've personally done a combination. Many years ago, I did join a peer group. I joined a group of women business owners. I joined a different group of just, you know, business owners that met for, you know, breakfast or what have you, and sort of roundtable discussions. I've been involved in industry associations. So I think we've just, I think I pick up different ideas from different people, and I always love getting out and attending conferences and meeting others that are involved in entrepreneurship and business to see what they are doing and how they're being successful. I think acquisitions are definitely an option, but they're not for everyone. I mean, it is something like anything that you learn through experience, but I think each business owner kind of needs to find their own comfort zone and method for success. I also think some business owners need to ask, are they really more interested in a lifestyle business, or they're interested in growing their business? Because it's important to be mindful of what the goal is. Ultimately, if the goal is to have more of a lifestyle business, then it's important to structure it and invest in that way. But if the goal is to grow, then you need to make a different sort of effort to actually grow and a different kind of investment.
I think one of the key things you mentioned is asking for help and listening to others. And a lot of people kind of live in their own bubble, so to speak, and feel like they've been successful on their own. Why do they need to reach out? So kind of setting that ego aside and knowing that, to your point earlier, you know, hiring people who are phenomenal leaders themselves and even sometimes more experienced than you as the founder CEO and who have that experience is smart, but also learning from those who have been through it and asking for their feedback and advice and learning from that is really critical. So, and I hear people who don't. They refuse to go to industry conferences. They refuse to ask for help or join peer groups. And, you know, I think to myself and sometimes say, well, I can understand why you're in the position you're in, because you're not, you've got to learn, right? You have to learn to grow. So anyway, with that, Ranjini, you are fantastic. Again, a leader I look up to in the industry, and I like to think through the work we're doing, we're really paving that path for future generations of leaders in the industry. just a quick take from your opinion on where do you think or how do you believe the industry will be different in the next 10 years, and what do you hope to leave legacy-wise?
As far as how the industry is going to change, I think there's no crystal ball, unfortunately. And that's one of the reasons I still, you know, love to talk to others in the industry to learn their thoughts as to how we're going to change and evolve. Often we're hearing so much about online staffing and some of the other tools and innovations, and I always think about how will it affect our industry and our clients, and how can we continue to add value to our clients. In terms of my legacy, RTEC is responsible for providing the livelihood for thousands of folks across the globe, and that's really what I look at as my legacy. I mean, as a firm, we've provided an opportunity for our teams to prosper both professionally and personally, and that's what I hope I'm remembered for.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. So we have come to the end of our podcast here, and I'm going to just quickly put you on the spot because obviously there's plenty of articles about you. You're quoted a lot and have stories to share, but is there one thing maybe we don't know about you that people would perhaps find surprising?
Sure. So I used to be a diehard Dodgers fan. I mean, I think I grew up in Southern California and got into watching baseball because of my younger brother, and was just addicted to it for many years, and then moved out east and kind of lost interest, but people don't really think of me in that light, so I think that's always surprising
right.
to folks when they learn
avid
that.
Sports. Right, avid baseball fan. That is good to know. Those people listening, you know what to bring up in conversation now to draw some attention, so that's terrific. Thank you. So with that, Ranjini, how can people get in touch with you if they would like to reach out and have any questions for you directly?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Ranjini Poddar, and of course I'm on LinkedIn, and you know, those are great ways of getting in touch. I'm always looking to connect and network, and look forward to hearing from folks.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much again for joining us on The Edge, and we look forward to staying in touch.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email, and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.